short program here of UX Lightning Talks. So I'm going to go to here, to here. I'm talking about the lost art of simplicity very briefly. And this is a little bit of what is user experience kind of 101. Because we've talked about user experience quite a bit, but we haven't really dove into that. What is it and what are we actually trying to solve? We've got a handful of great lightning talks here set up. You've heard a great bit about kind of interactivity and experience with users and that kind of stuff. What is user experience a little bit? So let me talk about simplicity a minute. And simplicity, I like to go back to the dictionary definition of things and kind of get a start for where do the canonical sources say that, what do they say about it? So I start looking at things like this, and it says, the property or condition or quality of being simple and uncombined. Actually, I like that definition a little bit. Because most of the time when people think of simple, they think of, I could have done that in a weekend, right? Like Twitter, for example. How many people, when you first saw Twitter, thought, that's so simple, I could have done that in a weekend? If you don't have your hand raised, you're probably in the wrong room. And the word user group is down the hall, and yeah, I mean, come on. The rest of us, all of us techies, we looked at that and we went, really? Twitter? Come on. Whereas a lot of people looked at Twitter and they went, oh, I get it. Now, we looked at it and we said, it's so simple. Why would anybody, come on, it's so simple. Property or condition or quality being simple and uncombined. Now, does that sound like anything in technology? Kind of sounds like object-oriented development, right? Where we're supposed to be creating uncombined, not these tightly coupled kind of things, but things where they're going to be kind of simple and uncombined. All right, let's keep going here. So let's skip down to three here. With an absence of pretense. So it does exactly what it says that it does. Does what it does, what it says on the tin, so to speak. It doesn't try to be anything bigger than that or anything so on. I like that one. Okay, and we skip on down here to number 5 here, 5A, a clarity of expression. That's interesting. I like that one. So we go from what most people think of when they think of simple. And they think of number 4 here with a lack of sophistication or good sense. Let's think about this the way that I like to read simplicity here. The property or condition or quality of being simple and uncombined with an absence of pretense and a clarity of expression. Now, that's a beautiful statement about software. And that is really what I think that we in the software industry should be striving for, is that type of simplicity. So the problem is that we are a race of problem solvers, and so the problems that we are most proud of solving are the ones where we are the only ones who are able to understand the answer. But our users come to us on a daily basis with very simple problems, very simple things that they need done for them. Okay, it could be that they need this button blue, or they need the aggregate sales number for this product over a certain region. And when we hear, oh, well, they need the aggregate sales number over the, for this product over a certain region, we immediately start thinking, oh, they need a report writing tool. Is that what the user asked for? No. The user asked for a number. What's the fastest and easiest way that we can give them that number? Go write a SQL query, and we pull that number, and we give them the number. Did they ask for a report? No, they asked for a number. The second time they ask for the number, you give them a way to go pull that number. By the time you get to the third time, now you have seen a pattern and you're able to give them a tool to do so. But in the meantime, we're terrified that they're going to go open up Access or Excel or Lotus Notes or something like that and go solve this problem themselves. And why are we terrified of that? Now, we say it's not enterprise quality. whatever that means. But what we really mean is, I don't want to be irrelevant because you can solve problems faster than I can. That's what we mean. And so we prevent them from going and solving problems on their own. Now, there are some legitimate reasons for it. Some of the legitimate reasons are things like data could be stale if they export the data and they're working off of stale data the next day. Or there's data security issues where they are copying and saving that data on their local drive and then they may lose that hard drive. I mean, there are some legitimate reasons for us not letting them do that. But really, at the heart of it, what we're all terrified of is that we're going to be irrelevant. And so what we do here is we start throwing our smartest guys at it, okay? Our computer scientists, okay? Now, there are some people that do some very advanced things with algorithms and, you know, that kind of stuff, and they are truly scientists. Most of the rest of our industry are not what the scientific community would call scientists, okay? But we start throwing very smart people at it, and we start solving this thing like Wile E. Coyote. And, I mean, we're able to give them in 18 months a huge, overwhelming project that will actually give them the number. But A, it's too late. And B, it's too overbearing and heavy for what they were actually asking for in the first place. And instead, what we should have done from the beginning was give them the number. Okay? So, what they really needed was a taller guy. And this is one of the things that's kind of crazy. When you think about our industry, is that how many people have read The Innovator's Dilemma? Okay. The rest of you need to put this on your must-buy list. Okay? Today. When you go home tonight, when you're sipping your pint, go on Amazon and buy this book. Okay? The Innovator's Dilemma, one of its core theses is that the truly disruptive technologies, the game-changing, industry-changing technologies are almost never the result of new technology. What they are is they're recombinations of existing and often cheap technologies in ways that the original innovators did not imagine. So let's take an example of this and look at the Kinect. How many people have had a chance to go play with the Kinect on the breaks there? Okay, good. Go play with the Kinect. It's fantastic. And what it has done is there was a guy in Microsoft Research that had this idea, and he went and he started reading through white papers that other people at Microsoft Research had already produced, and they started cobbling together really kind of off-the-shelf consumer technology. So inside of that bar is a couple of consumer-grade webcams, an infrared depth kind of a sensor, a microphone array, and some smarts that actually cobble all those things together. The result is far greater than the sum of the parts. And all of these technologies are fairly off-the-shelf existing technologies. Now, if you go back 2 years, there were four or five of such devices in the world, and they cost $50,000 apiece because they were so custom and so on and so forth. And now you can buy it for 150 quid and rock on. You look at cloud computing. Cloud computing is revolutionizing our industry. But really underneath the hood, it's still web servers and HTTP and so on and so forth. It's not new technology. It's just using and leveraging that technology in a completely new way, in ways that we didn't imagine at the beginning. But in the meantime, we have to realize we are the problem. Okay? We're the ones that are in denial. So what do we do now? So first thing we have to do is realize that there is no magic bullet. Okay, there is no silver bullet that will just change the world and make everything simple. Okay, what we have to do is realize that simplicity itself is not the goal. It is the byproduct of a good idea and modest expectations. If you think about Twitter for a minute, Twitter started out with, okay, I want to text one person, but okay, that's not good enough. I want to text 20 people. That's a modest expectation. And out of that has grown this thing that all of us use on a daily basis. Okay? So how do we get to simplicity? There's three areas I want to talk about. Okay? I want to talk about engineering, process, and user experience. So on the engineering side, we need to get away from the new shiny. Okay, think about that new technology that you just heard about, except for at this conference. At this conference, you know, the new technologies are great, and you should use all of them. Right? Okay. But if you think about it, you know, one of the greatest things that I ever saw implemented at a company was there was a 2-week quarantine period when somebody came back from a conference. And for 2 weeks after a conference, they were not allowed to touch production code. Because they would come back and they'd hear, oh, Node.js is the most awesome thing in the world. We have to go rewrite everything with Node.js. And they would go do that. Oops. What was the business problem that Node.js was actually solving? Oh, there wasn't one. Oh. So now we've spent 3 months rewriting. So now we have to, okay, is this the right decision? So the new technologies come out for a reason. There's a reason that they're there. They're there to solve problems. Go look at the new technologies. You should understand what they are, and you should see where they fit into your company, fit into your business processes. What problems are they solving in your project? Second thing I want to get to is strategy, because sometimes it does matter how you get there. One of the big bits that we oftentimes fail to do is involve the users early enough. Okay, how many people actually write code with your user standing there? One, two. And one kind of going, I kind of do. I promise. I'm teasing. So how many of you have ever met your users? That's actually a decent percentage. Okay. Now, if you've met them and you've talked to them, why don't you bring them in occasionally and have them sit there while you're coding? Okay. How early in the project should you involve your users? My answer is immediately. Okay. And if you can't get your user, go hire one. Okay. When I was writing banking software for a living, we would go down to the local teller's office, you know, or the local bank, and we'd go into their tellers and say, you know, $50 and all the pizza you can eat. Come down to the shop, and we're going to videotape you using our software, and then we're going to work on our software with you sitting there to help get through some hairy, nasty problems. And we'd hire them for spot moments in time, and that we learned so much about ourselves and about our products and everything else by doing that on a very constant and very consistent basis. So get to know your users. Another thing is, don't let complexity sneak in under the guise of things like enterprise. When I think enterprise, immediately there's a complexity factor of 10 in every enterprise project. Why? Oh, it needs to be enterprise scale. You know what? Facebook has lost more users today than you will ever have. So don't tell me scale is the issue. Okay? Scale is not the issue. What is the issue is that in the enterprise, your software will be running in 30 years. Don't believe me? Go ask a mortgage company. Go ask an insurance company. Go ask any company that is more than 30 years old. They have software that has been running for 30 years. That's why COBOL programmers still exist. And Fortran. Rock on. So what that means is that you have to be able to interop and integrate with anything that has been written in the last 30 years or that will be written in the next 30 years. And what that means is an extreme focus on open standards and understanding what those protocols are. So, you know, Wilbur mentioned in his talk that he prefers RESTful interfaces to anything else. Absolutely. You should prefer RESTful interfaces. You should prefer XML. You should prefer JSON. You should prefer, you know, open standards. And where there is an open standard for your specific industry, like if you're doing archiving of video in libraries, believe it or not, there is a standard that is specifically for archiving video in libraries. Go investigate those. User experience. We can't let the designers design everything. One of my favorite designer jokes is that if we let designers design a nightclub, it would be spacious, well-lit, with lots of places for quiet conversation, and nobody would be there. So, you know, if you look at the designers of the world, they're the ones that actually go talk to the users most of the time. And we should involve them in every project very early on, because they will actually be able to understand what is the tool that the user needs for this specific job. And they'll be able to go answer that problem for that user today. Okay, so go understand who your users are, what are the tools that they actually need for today's job, and then go build those. And you need to build those in a very quick and iterative fashion so that the user can use them on a daily basis and give you lots of feedback very quickly. So, in short, that is my vision of how we should write software. We should be aiming for simplicity. Okay, but simplicity itself is actually not the goal. It is the byproduct of that simple idea and modest expectations. So let's look beyond what the user is asking for and look beyond what we think that they need and go build what they actually need. Quick call out to my artist, Fritz, a.k.a. the Hiking Artist. All the artwork used in this presentation are all Creative Commons produced by Fritz. They're fantastic artists. I highly recommend that you look him up. So with that, thank you.